Welcome to GeoTalk, the podcast for geocaches down under.
In this second episode of GeoTalk, we continue our interview with Clyde E. about GSAC. We take a look at the best urban caches in the ACT, preview more Christmas geo events around the country, and have a laugh with Geocacher Cached. All this and more on GeoTalk. Welcome to GeoTalk episode 2. It's been a crazy fortnight in Australia. If you're living on the south or eastern parts of the country, you'll know that we've gone from freezing cold weather, in fact there was snow in some parts of the country, through to bushfires and heat waves in the last few days, and it certainly made geocaching a challenging experience for most of us. It's not that I needed the challenge, because last weekend I had 5 DNFs in a row. I think that's an all-time record for me. Certainly wasn't a geocaching frame of mind. But on the flip side, it's been great, the response to the first episode. Thank you for everyone who downloaded the podcast and also providing feedback through the forums and via email. I can let you know that I'll be using a lot of those suggestions to help improve the show over the next few months. I better not talk anymore because we've got a packed program, so let's get geo-talking. Well, in this episode of GeoTalk, we catch up with Sam, also known as Cached, who lists herself as being both from South Australia and Tasmania. How are you going, Sam? And can you start by telling us why you're listed in two different places?
I actually live in South Australia, but I'm Tasmanian by birth, and as far as I'm concerned, I'm still Tasmanian, so I get down there as often as I possibly can.
And so when did you start geocaching?
I think I started in about March or April 2003, but I'd actually signed up for the website a bit over a year prior, but never did anything with it.
So how did you find out about geocaching?
I'm a venturer scout leader, and one of my venturers turned up one night and said, my sister in Sydney's been out doing this. Do you reckon we could get to it for venturers? And I said, yeah, well, I've heard of that, and I think I might have even signed up to the website, so why don't we go and have a go? And it all took off from there.
So do you remember the first cache that you found?
I think the first cache that I did is Raff Chapel, right outside the Raff base at Edinburgh.
And so how long was it before you realised you were hooked into geocaching?
Probably 3 or 4 days. we went nuts pretty much from the start. Tends to be that sort of thing, though, doesn't it?
Doesn't take too long for any of us. How did you come up with the name Cached?
Well, it's actually an abbreviation, would you believe? I originally started out trying to be clever, and I picked out All Cached Up as a name, but it was meant to be All Cached Up, which was meant to be a clever pun on the name. And of course, we don't say cached, we say cached, or at least I say cached, so my name became making no sense at all. So I shortened it to just cached, and was quite surprised to find that so many years into the game, nobody else had taken it.
So what's the most interesting aspect about geocaching for you?
The personal challenges, I think, the getting out and doing things that I wouldn't normally do. And seeing, you know, the fairly standard seeing the things that you don't see, that I get a bit of a buzz out of pushing myself a bit further or heading off to do things or solving puzzles that I wouldn't have given myself credit for being able to do.
So when you go out on a geocache hunt, what's the ideal cache that you're looking for?
Oh, I tend to like them in caves and tunnels and things. My favourite caches, I think, would be Astro La Vista, with a tunnel out the back of Kapunda by Astro, and another one in Adelaide called On Your Knees that's, I think, it lives in Bruce. And they're great because they're underground and they're just something different.
So you wouldn't be tempted with a drive-by micro, for example?
Oh, I'll do them and quite enjoy them if they're there for a good reason. I like a clever cache, I think. Something that's got a twist to it.
So are there any memorable moments that you've had while geocaching?
I was talking about this with the kids in the car tonight. I think some of my best ones were walking up Damney Mountain in Tassie with my father, who's Rob Tass, and we're about three quarters of the way up, And I said to Dad, you know, if I'd said to you 6 months ago, come on, let's go and walk up that hill, you'd have told me to get stuffed. And he said, you wouldn't have asked because I just would have never considered walking up a great hill. But you put a box on top of it and I'll go.
Do you think you've ever put yourself in a situation where you've thought, oh, I'm in trouble here, I've gone too far?
To be honest, I don't think I have. And we've all had our close calls, but no, I've never ended up in a situation that was anybody's fault other than my own. I think that tends to be true of it too. You have to take responsibility for yourself when you're out caching. What you do, your own problem, not the person that hit it.
Now, about a year ago, geocaching.com removed locationless caches from their listings, but they're still available on geocaching.com.au. And you seem to have quite a unique one called Nude Up for a Smiley. Can you explain what that cache is all about?
Oh, that's there for a good laugh. And I like to think that it's a cache that's going to give people a bit of a laugh and, again, push their limits a little bit. Make them take a little bit of a risk. And for some reason in our society, getting your gear off seems to have a bit of a taboo to it. So I thought it would be really funny to make people get their kit off at a cache so they can now get their kit off at a cache and pull up an extra smiley and have a bit of a laugh. And it's amazing how many people will quite happily line up for it and then admit that at the end of the day that they really probably consider themselves a nudist anyway. So, no, it's all fun.
Now, you also have a role in Geocaching Australia in that you look after the wiki. Can you explain to us a little bit about the Geocaching Australia wiki?
Basically, the wiki is like a big chance to have a knowledge store and for people to get those little snippets that they know onto the net so that other people can benefit from their knowledge. And you don't have to be an expert or anything. You can just, if you see an error and you fix it, then we're one step ahead. If you know something and you can't find it anywhere, put it in the wiki and that way everybody else can benefit from it. And it doesn't matter if your grammar's bad or sentence structure's awful because somebody else would jump in and fix it, but they wouldn't have put it there in the first place.
And just finally, before I let you go, can you give some idea of where you see yourself in the next year or two geocaching?
Well, I want to rack up my 1,000 and hopefully that's not too far away. And I actually started caching at the same time as SA Paratech. And he's already knocked up his 1,000 and he's been gradually creeping away from me in the last about 18 months. But he's broken his leg. So I thought I might take advantage for the next couple of months to go nuts and try and catch up with him. But the next couple of years, I'm not sure. It seems to be a hobby that you tend to have a reasonably limited lifetime in, I think. So we'll see how we go.
Well, Sam, thanks very much for talking to us and all the best in your geocaching adventures.
Great. Thanks very much, Darren.
And now it's time for our special on caches in the ACT, and part one we're going to look at suburban caches. Now don't panic if you don't get all these down straight away, because I'm going to put them all on the website with links so you can follow them up afterwards. Now any person who has geocached in Canberra will tell you, most caches in the region seem to be on top of a hill, and in some respects this is true, but it does mean that each of them come with a fantastic view, and one of the first geocaches to be placed in Canberra was Canberra Nature Park, which is on top of Mount Painter. Now it's a relatively short walk, although the last 100 metres do involve a bit of a steep climb. It's a well-stocked cache and will give you fantastic views of Belconnen and Lake Burley Griffin. Now while we're on the topic of Lake Burley Griffin, Mount Springbank is another great cache to do, especially if you can get your hand on a kayak, or you could do as I did and wait for a hot day and go for a swim. Can You Hear the Bells Fernando is another one on the lake, but it's located on Aspen Island, home of the Carillion, and it seems to accumulate a lot of DNFs, and when you go and visit, you'll know why. Most people who go to Canberra drive to the top of the two mountains, Black Mountain and Mount Ainslie, and fortunately there are a number of caches close to the top of these. Mount Ainslie boasts Pole Position, Cache on the Hill, Forgotten Heroes, Remembrance Park and Fallen. And just north of Mount Ainslie is another great cache on Mount Majura called Third Time Lucky. On Black Mountain you'll find Geocache, Botanical Boggle, and the start of Tourist Tours. Now this is a great one to do because it takes you around the tourist attractions in the Parliamentary Triangle. So not only can you do another multi-cache, but visit some of the museums in the area. If you decide to venture out a little bit further from the city, there's a lot of great caches to be found in the suburbs. In Belconnen is the winner of the ACT Cache of the Year for 2004, called Sparky, and I'm not going to give you any clues on how to do this except to suggest give it a go. Winner of the ACT Cache of the Year in 2005 is All Measured Up. Now, this is a very clever cache because it involves you making three different types of measurements at three separate locations, and you'll need the numbers from these to help you crack the code to open the cache. Now, if you travel to Belconnen, I recommend you do a stroll around the lake and Poetry, which has a really clever way of logging your find. Also in the area are Roger the Cabin Boy and Pinnacle of Canberra. Both of these caches have fantastic views of the Brindabella Mountains. If there's only one cache you do in the Gungahlin region, try Golden Hills. It will have you frustrated for hours. Then again, you may find it straight away. If you go down to Woden or Western Creek, the standouts in this area are Taylor's Tops and Closer to the Stars, the latter being at the Mount Stromlo Observatory, and both of them on top of peaks that were devastated by the bushfires of 2003. Finally, if you travel down to Tuggeranong, you must give Max Peak a go. It's a great multi and will have you puffing and puffing by the time you get to the top. But if you want an even better workout, try Tuggeranong's Top. And I can guarantee it is one of the best views in the ACT, particularly for a suburban cache. After completing this cache, you can travel a little bit further south to Langyen, where you can go to the Nolan Gallery and then try and complete the multi-cache Langyen Loop. But be warned, you may get your feet wet. Well, that's my tour of the must-do caches in the suburban area of Canberra. Next episode, I'm going to take you out of the city and into some of the real gut-busting and calf-burning caches that make the Canberra region one of the most challenging and rewarding geocaching experiences. Well, now it's time to ring around and find out what's happening around the country. We're joined by Shelley now from Team Spruce Mooses down in Victoria, who will be hosting the Christmas event down in Melbourne. Can you explain to us, Shelley, where and when it's all happening?
All right. Well, we had a bit of a talk about on the forums about where we were going to hold it, and the vote seemed to point up to Mount Macedon. It's about an hour northwest of Melbourne. We decided it was a good place in between Melbourne and Bendigo, and nice and accessible to most people, and it's a really lovely spot in summertime. So, we're having it at Stanley Park up at Mount Macedon.
And this will be on exactly the same date as the events in both Sydney, Perth, and I believe in Brisbane as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think there's one in Tasmania as well. So it's the Great Aussie Christmas Barbecue is a nationwide event, which is a really good idea for a bunch of events, and everyone around Australia can celebrate caching at Christmas on the same day.
Sounds like a great idea. Now, if people are coming up, what do they need to bring along with them?
All right, they need to bring anything they want for lunch. There are barbecues available, but there's only two up there. So if people want to bring a picnic lunch, that's great. If they want to bring meat for the barbecue, that's also fantastic. We're also having a Acacia Kris Kringle, which is something unique to the Victorians. We always like to see quality swaps in our caches, so we're going to have a quality swap Kris Kringle as our cache swaps for the day.
Now, I noticed that on the page for your event, you've got some pretty big names coming along. Can you go through some of them?
We've got Macamob. I think Biggles Bear is coming. Team Crackers, I think, is an apology at the moment. We've got Dak. So a lot of Australia's caching royalty, as you'd say.
I think combined they log up somewhere in the order of about 15,000 caches.
Lot of caches in between those people. So.
Yeah. So if you're new to the game or you've known of these people for a while, you must go to the Mount Macedon geocaching event, unless, of course, you're in one of the other states and you should probably go to that one.
Yep. There's going to be lots of new people there, and we're really happy to see them all. So any other newbies out there who want to come along, by all means, feel free, and you can grab some tips off some of the older ones, and it should be a really good day.
Thanks very much for joining us, Shelley.
Thank you.
All right, joining me on the line is Monty from Freddo and Friends over in Adelaide. How are you, Monty?
Very good, thank you.
Now, I understand that in South Australia you're going to be holding a Christmas event, but it's a little bit different to the other states. Can you explain what exactly you're going to be doing?
Yeah, we had a little problem with the barbecue event. We discussed it a couple of times on the forum, and we found that it clashed with two other events, major events in South Australia. One of them was our big Christmas do, which happens the following Wednesday, and the Ashes Test, which actually is on during the event. So we decided, let's see if we can compromise a little, and we came up with the idea of a short, quick event during the luncheon interval of cricket.
Now, the event itself, therefore, is going to be fairly close, I presume, to the Adelaide Oval.
Yeah, we've set the event location at Light Statue. It's about 200 metres north of the northern gates of the Adelaide Oval. It'll give us time to get out, get to the event. Starts at 11 minutes past one, have the event for 12 minutes, finish the event at 1:23, and head back to the cricket.
What should people bring if they're coming along to this event?
Themselves. We've declared that the event, they need to bring a bar, a B, a Q, or an Aussie.
Well, look, like it sounds like a very unusual and fun event. If you want to check it out, it's GCZ987. Thanks very much for chatting to us, Monty.
No worries. Thanks for that.
And finally, we travel to central Queensland, where we're joined by Dan Dent from Rockhampton. Hi, Dan. How are you?
No, not too bad. Thanks, Darren.
Now, you've got an event that's running on the 2nd of December. Can you tell us where that will be held?
For the first one, we're going to organise it at the Tourist Information Centre on the south side of town. It's an easy spot. It's on the highway, so there'll be not too much searching to actually find it.
So what prompted you to arrange this event in Rockhampton?
I'm pretty new to geocaching. I only started at the beginning of the year. And, yeah, I've been running around and finding all these other caches, and slowly we can just see that these hobby, if you like to call it that, is gaining popularity, and there's quite a few other sort of caches that have just come along in the last few months. So I took it as a sort of prime opportunity to meet and greet, put some faces to some names in the region, and yeah, just general chat about geocaching and where we're going and what's going on in this region.
So is there anything special that people should bring along to the event?
Nothing special. We're trying to keep it pretty informal. For those other caches that have been doing it for a while, I plan to release about 7 to 10 caches on the day, leaving a whole heap of unactivated geocoins for first to find prizes. So there's nothing really that people got to bring except themselves and their GPSs.
Now, before I let you go, I must ask you the question, what's it like geocaching up in central Queensland? Because must get hot this time of the year.
You start sort of filtering out your caches and start looking at the difficulty and the terrain and the walk. And during summer, you start sticking to those easy ones.
Sounds like a very good idea. Look, thanks very much for joining us, Dan, and good luck with the event.
Thanks very much. Cheers.
Dan also wanted to mention after that interview that a number of geocachers will be travelling a couple of hundred kilometres to get to the event, so it certainly shows you have to be dedicated in that part of the country. I should also mention there are a number of other geocaching Christmas events occurring around Australia, including Brisbane and Mount Gambier, so check out the websites for more information. Last episode, we spoke to Clyde England, the creator of Geocache Swiss Army Knife, about why it was developed. In the second part of the special, Ian, also known as Papa Bear Left, chats to Clyde about help files, macros, and the future of GSAC.
Your help file is legendary. This is obviously coming from an IT professional who must have had this beaten into you over a long period. But typically, I've noticed with a lot of shareware, the help file involves saying, here's our homepage, and perhaps read the forums, and that's really the extent of it. Was your help file, I think, is it larger than the program?
Yeah, well, one of the reasons it's so large is because the help tool that I'm using has to use what's called BMP, bitmap files, and they're quite big. There's dual images as well. Some of them are just the bitmap file, but some of them are image files where they've got hot links in them. Yeah, well, what you're saying is correct. A lot of people underestimate what is actually in the help file. It's sometimes a lot easier just to ask a question in the forum. But it's a twofold thing, really. It does lessen my support burden if I can make the help file in such a way that people can glean the information from the help file rather than have to try and ask a question. Some people, I think, don't realise that when you go into a help screen, just move your mouse around on the screen that you're looking at. Sometimes they just look at the screen and that's it. They're not aware that they can actually move their mouse and say, well, what does that bit of information mean? The initial help system, I've got to thank, there's one man I've got to thank very much here, that he did have a lot of input and actually did help me out extensively starting out the help files, because again, it was a time when I was absolutely flat out, and he put up his hand and says, look, until you get on your feet and you get going, and I'm prepared to collate that information and start the help files for you. And that was, have you heard of Dax Emu Mob?
Mm-hmm.
He's a Keisha, which I met actually, came over here on business at one stage, and we met up at the local hotel here and had a good talk about GSAC and etc. in general. But I've got to thank him, because he did everything he said he was going to do, and that was do the initial help file version one, if you like. And that was the start. So really all I had to do from then onwards was whenever I made changes was to add those changes to the help file. But like a lot of things initially, it's very difficult to start.
In very round numbers, how many copies of GSAC are out there?
Well, it depends whether you... If you want to know how many copies of GSAC are out there, yeah, I can roughly tell you my latest downloads are up around 9,000. But that doesn't mean how many registered members I've got. Some of them, as I say, are holding on. I've had people that have said that they've finally registered after using it for a year. So that's how long you can be waiting before you get some remuneration. And it's growing, you know. You can tell from the download counter that it's growing every day, sort of thing. Now, whether those people that download will continue to use it, I guess, is another story.
But there's not much opposition anymore. I mean, you basically replace a whole suite of programs. I mean, when I think back to pre-GSAC, I was, you know, paperless caching and doing much the same sort of functionality, but I was having to run half a dozen different programs to do it.
This is something I sort of don't understand, to be honest. Well, I do. I do and I don't. I say don't because exactly what you're saying, it's obvious that geocaching, there's a lot of things people want to do. And it was obvious that these tools were around. But that was the problem. They were individual tools to do a niche thing. Some people almost think that GSAC is a GUI for GPS Babble, which in some ways is a fair comment, but I honestly would like to think that GSAC is a lot more than just a GUI to GPS Babble. Having said that, Babble is a great program for doing that, for converting from one format to another.
So why reinvent that wheel?
Exactly, why reinvent? I did. I started out reinventing that wheel. And I remember talking to some people over east, which were helping me decipher the formats and what they were, binary formats, and I was trying to re-engineer them. I was getting documentation on different formats. And then lo and behold, Robert Leip, who is the author of GPS Babble, although it's a SourceForge project, he's really the driving force behind the whole thing. He basically said exactly that to me. He said, look, why reinvent the wheel? And this was also about the time when GSAC was wanting, people were demanding, if you like, to be able to download waypoints to their GPS. And fortunately, GPS Babble could do that as well. So that was really the marriage then between GSAC and GPS Babble. It was really instigated by Robert Light. But basically, I get requests from everywhere. I get them from the forums. I get them from personal email, just everywhere. And basically, I just collate those requests into a spreadsheet. I've just got a spreadsheet which has just got all these requests in there, and alongside them I just put the number of times somebody, it has been requested. And basically I just sort on that number, so the most often requested features just filter their way to the top. And it's very dynamic. It keeps on changing all the time. I will confess that, that I do have some pet projects of my own, and I guess I've got to have some poetic license here, being the author, but I will throw in some features I just think are cool. But predominantly, features I put in there are what the majority of people have requested.
Being a lazy side, I'd like to be able to push a button and say, okay, update everything.
You're not alone there, and I'll have to confess on this one, macros was not one of my pet projects. That was definitely a user request one, and it was something I actually put off. I was getting requests at the beginning and just sort of pushing them under the rug. Oh, they'll go away. Because I was saying at the time, well, GSAC's a GUI interface. What do you want macros for? Macros are for GPS babble, you know. That's when you want to get down at the low end and you want to get involved in doing things outside of a GUI interface. What do you want it in a GUI interface for? And I got to admit, I was wrong. I stand corrected. Because it is the biggest sleeper of the whole GSAC program that I've found. So yeah, what I'm finding is it's a real boon in the sense that it is meeting requests that people want now. Some people are impatient, they want it now. So the macro language is rich enough now, so it has become quite powerful. And people can do the sort of things that you're after. And already that people have become very creative and they're doing things even I wouldn't have thought they would have been able to do with it.
As someone who uses GSAC on at least a weekly basis, I have trouble thinking back to the effort I used to expend. You know, it would take me half an hour before I went out caching to put all the data together. Now it takes me a couple of minutes and I've got a much better data set. And the end result is that, unlike you've been able to do recently, it means I can get out there and go looking for bits of plastic.
Let's face it, that's what it's all about. You know, people are in this hobby sport, call it what you like, to enjoy themselves. Yeah. And the enjoyment for a large part of this congregation is getting out there and looking for these little bits of plastic. Yeah. So if you can cut down the time that you spend up front mucking around so that you can get out there and do it, then I've got to think it's for the good.
Yep. So what's next for GSAC? What's going now?
Good question. So some people want me to get into mapping. That's one of those things which I'll probably only do when I've got nothing else to do. There is a lot of competition out there as far as mapping goes, and there's a lot of mapping that's done very well. I plan to just keep doing what I'm doing. And by that, what I mean is continue to support GSAC, continue to develop it. And when you ask what's coming up new for GSAC, really, it is largely user-driven. As I say, I've still got a few little pet projects of my own which come under the cool factor that I want to put in there. And they're just, I don't know whether you call them icing on the cake or whether you call them frivolous or what you like to call them, but that keeps my interest going. GSAC is forever going to be a work in progress. It's never going to be finished. And the reason being is geocaching just keeps evolving.
Well, on behalf of the cachers who have managed to get out there and find bits of plastic under bushes, thank you very much for writing GSAC for us, Clay Newman.
Okay.
It's time to delve into the GeoTalk mailbag. Okay, first off, we got an email from Mark, also known as MB down in Victoria. He just wanted to mention that both himself and his partner Jeanette are expecting a Geo baby on January the 6th, and they promised to let us know when he or she will arrive. Snoover from Tasmania also roped in his slave to send an email and say hi. By the way, Snoover's a schnauzer, so don't worry about the slaves thing. Also got some international emails. Thanks very much to Mike, also known as PDOPS from Alberta in Canada, Brian from SODAC, Searches 3 in South Dakota, and also from N9PPA in Princeton, Indiana. And also a big congratulations to Danielle, also known as Everlasting from Western Australia, for cracking the big 1,000. Dan from Rockhampton, who I spoke to earlier in the podcast, said that she has no hesitation at all in trying some of the most difficult caches and sometimes by herself. So from everyone in geocaching land, congratulations, Everlasting, and please take care when you're by yourself. Now, in the next episode of Geo Talk, we'll be profiling someone from Western Australia. We'll have part two of my favourite caches in the ACT. And with summer just around the corner, we're going to learn about what you should do if you encounter a snake while out geocaching. And also remember, if you want to drop us an email, send it to geotalk@mac.com, or you can follow the link from our website, which is geotalk.libsyn.com. Until next time, safe geocaching.